It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Richard Campbell's here. I'm back, baby. We're going to talk about lots of stuff, including the end of life of Windows 10. It's now been extended for 3 years, but it'll cost you. Copilot comes to Windows 10, a new Copilot in Windows 11, and Richard bought a new PC. Can you guess which one? It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell, episode 858, recorded Wednesday, December 6th, 2023. Quaff and nosh. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Lookout. Whether on a device or in the cloud, your business data is always on the move. Minimize risk, increase visibility, and ensure compliance with Lookout's unified platform. Visit lookout.com today. And by our friends at IT Pro TV, now called ACI Learning. Keep your IT team's skills up with the speed of technology. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. Twit listeners, you'll get up to 65% off an IT Pro Enterprise Solution Plan. Just complete the form. It's based on your team size. Once you complete the form, you'll get a properly quoted discount tailored to your needs. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And here they are, ladies and gentlemen, the stars of our show, all the way from beautiful Orlando, Florida, where he is inventing the new Windows 11 ride, Mr. Richard Campbell of Renaz Radio. He's an Imagineer now, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, Richard.
Damn it. I'm having an experience. No two ways about it.
And joining us from a beautiful lower Macungie Valley.
Just Macungie.
Oh, you're Macungie now. Okay.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. No.
He's done all the Macungies.
You told me.
It's so confusing because.
You told me you were back.
You're right. No, geographically.
Lower.
Sorry. Yeah. Geographically, I am in lower Macungie. But yeah. Because Pennsylvania is so messed up, my postal code is for Macungie.
In fact. Weirdly, lower Macungie is above upper Macungie. So,
lower Macungie is above. Yeah, in many ways it is, yes. And I stand by that.
Anyway, thank you to Micah Sargent, who filled in for me last week and did, I'm sorry to say, too good a job. So, never again. No, he's great. And I had a wonderful time on my digital detox. Now I shake when I pick up a phone. It's like, yeah. I am you, and you know what I'm talking about, Paul. I would love to just take this and throw it in the lake. Yeah. what happened this week? Actually, I need you because I was not paying attention. Did anything happen this week?
Right. Yeah, a bunch happened. You were good to miss last week. Not a lot happened last week.
Okay, I'll take that
because of Thanksgiving and. Whatever. But Microsoft pulled the pin on this grenade, and they announced a lot earlier than I would have expected that they are going to indeed support Windows 10 as expected. Not for 10 more years. What does that say, 10 more years? For 3 more years.
But it'll cost
you. To an extent.
But it'll cost
you. It sure will.
Yeah.
But here's the twist. They're going to offer this to consumers as well, not just businesses for the first time.
Oh, well, how much? Did they say a price?
No, Leo, because that would be good information that people would want. No.
Isn't so they're going to announce. They've always done this for enterprise at great expense.
Yes.
Right?
Well, they've done it for the big ones, right? So they did it for Windows 7. They did it for Windows XP. I think they did it for XP twice, or they at least extended it once. We had a conversation on the show, I don't know, a month or so ago, where I went back and looked at StatCounter, usage share, I'll call it, relative to this time period in the Windows 7 time frame. And Windows 7 was actually a lot lower than Windows 10 is today by percentage. But they did the ESU for that. And, you know, at the time, it was like, obviously, they're going to do this. I thought they'd wait until the last minute. They've been talking big about, everyone should upgrade to Windows 11. It's going great. And, a lot of people are just staying on Windows 10. So probably roughly two-thirds.
It is 2 years away, right? Like, that gave us a lot of time.
Yep.
Surprised they did this early.
Well, this is the, there'll be a Windows 12 or whatever we're going to call the next thing, and a lot of people are going to skip 11. And I would just say, look, there's a lot of disgruntledness still out in the world about Windows 11. I think Windows 11's fine. You know, it wasn't fine when it first shipped. I mean, there was a lot of regression there, but they fixed all that, and I think it's a better looking OS. We can quibble over the security stuff, I guess. There's some convoluted language in this announcement where they kind of commingled the security benefits of Windows 11 with Copilot.
Like, what?
Which doesn't have any security implication at all.
Sure. Put AI on there. It'll be more secure. You bet.
Yeah. I don't know what that was all about. Not to mention the fact that Copilot is in Windows 10 now. So, anyhow.
Nominally, they said, as with all their versions, 10 years, which is mm-hmm. when 2025? October 2025.
2025. Yeah. Exactly 10 years. Yeah.
But yeah, you're going to be able to buy at some unnamed price 3 more years, even as a consumer, not merely a
that's right. Big but they have price. Not announced the pricing for either audience. So
can you speculate? Or do you think it'd be $1,000? I mean, what
I'd like to see them do for consumers and say is say, hey, if you're a Microsoft 365 subscriber, you get it.
Yeah. That'd be perfect.
I think so.
And that would drive subscriptions. That's a good idea.
Yeah. But we'll see. I mean, one of the big things that will happen between now and then is a lot more AI stuff in Windows. And we've discussed this notion of, do they charge for this? I mean, at some point, does it become a problem? Like, how do they recoup the costs? I don't know.
And they're saying it's only security patches. Like, why would you ever deny anyone a security patch?
This is right. So here's the dark side. This is the dark side of our community, Richard, in case you've never noticed this, is they complain about everything. So for example, in my audience, people read my site, when they were doing ESU for Windows 7, the big complaint was, how come I can't buy this? I mean, I'm not a business, but I don't, you know, why can't they do this for everybody? And now they're like, okay, we're going to do it for everyone. Like, well, I don't have to pay for this. It's like, guys, seriously. Like it's so classic and predictable, but I think this kind of covers the bases, right? So within the context of, yes, Microsoft artificially, changed the hardware requirements of Windows 11. And we can all complain about that. We should. But, you know, I always do the math on, the Intel 7th Gen Core, right? What year did that come out? And what's that computer? Yeah, a long time ago, right? Yeah. Not that far back, but I think 6th Gen was 2012, and I only remember that because of the Surface Gate stuff. So it was probably the following year. So it's, 10 years ago almost, at least, 10 probably. What will that computer look like in 5 years, which is what we're looking at here, right? 2 years to the end of support plus 3 more years. I mean, those aren't the only computers running Windows 10. I know that. But if you literally got cut out of Windows 11 because of the hardware requirements, that's the line. And I think that's reasonable, that time frame. And I know a lot of people are going to disagree with that, right? This thing works perfectly fine. Why can't I keep using it? We've all been in the subway when the Windows XP screen comes up on there, or I've been to my dentist or one of my doctors, also Windows XP, Windows 7 now.
Well,
that's going
to
happen.
It's not like Windows 10 is going to burst into flames if you don't buy the ESP, right?
No, that's what Mac OS does.
hey,
oh, sorry. Hey, Christina, people are still there. So yeah, I don't know. To me, this is fine. I mean, other than the fact that I don't know what the cost is going to be, and who knows, they may surprise us. You know, if you're on an unmanaged PC, maybe the right thing to do is let you have the security updates, right? Mm-hmm. We'll see, but I feel like it's weird because I complain about everything. You know that. I mean, I'd like to think that my complaining is in some way righteous, but when I look at this, I'm like, no, this is fine. Right. I mean, this is okay.
Yeah, but it's weird to announce something and not say how much it's going to cost. That's bizarre.
So yes. So on the one hand, I give them a little bit of credit for providing this clarity this far in advance. This is really about businesses, and it gives them that time frame now they need to plan. And they know what this might have cost in the past, and they can kind of figure, okay, it's going to be something similar to that. For individuals, I mean, most individuals never even heard about this, so that doesn't really impact them too much at all. And I have to imagine, a normal consumer, a mainstream non-technical person, one day they're going to get this weird pop-up on their screen that says, hey, we noticed you're not upgrading to Windows 11. You can keep using this, but you have to start paying us now. And it's going to be like, wait, what? That's not going to go over too well, for sure, right? And what's that going to look like? What does that do to people? Like, will those guys go to a Mac or maybe even a Chromebook or something? I mean, I don't know. So I think part of it is they really don't know the right way to handle this, but they did know, and they were correct, I think, in announcing this as soon as they did, because it's really about businesses and their planning schedules and their hardware cycles, and they'll upgrade to new hardware sometime between now and then, and they can plan accordingly. And they'll probably go to the next, whatever the current version of Windows is at the time.
I mean, that's the usual thing that you end up doing. The question, you give 2 years time horizon, so that means, do you stop a migration project? You're not going to do it now because you don't need to, but you don't know how much it costs. So
this is the balancing act, right? Do you want to, like, oh God, we just got a reprieve, you know, but you didn't really, because there are costs associated with it, right? So if you were planning on migrating or, you know, upgrading some, whatever it is, you buy new computers, you're going to put Windows 11 on them. I mean, I think the only thing that could change now is you might want to wait, because what if there's some good AI stuff going on in Windows 12 or whatever, and the computers that come out a year or two from now are going to have better MPUs and whatever capabilities. That honestly is not a horrible strategic bet to make either, if you're going to spend the money anyway. It might make sense to wait. Can we get another year out of the hardware we have now?
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
More.
Right. So there you go. I usually could find something, but to me, this is just like, no, this is good.
About right. But kind of what you expected. Maybe more.
It happened earlier than I expected. Yeah. I mean, based on simple math, there was no way this wasn't happening.
Yeah.
But I just didn't expect to hear it now. That just came out of the blue. So good for them.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
Microsoft,
it's
doing
odd.
The right thing for a change.
Yeah.
It's odd.
It's a little weird. unexpected, right? They've never done this
strangely
before.
Strangely content.
Yeah. Not this early.
Yeah.
I mean, and plus they've been talking such a big game on Windows 11, and it's so obviously not true when they talk about uptick. Oh, we're seeing better, uptick than ever, with businesses. Like, no,
what is it, like 24%? Of the total, it's not a huge.
It's somewhere in there. It's about a third, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, at best, yeah.
Yep. Well, I guess, thank you. I'm already on 11, so I guess I don't care, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that moment where Microsoft said, you know, we're going to just keep supporting Windows 10 with service update, with security updates and bug fixes. No new features, right? And I was like, man, that's going to be a compelling argument for a lot of people to stick on Windows 10. And then they started adding new features. And you're like, oh, right, it's Microsoft. Yeah. So I don't know what to say anymore. I mean, I guess now after 2025, there'll be no new features, because that literally is what they're promising. I don't know.
What are you going to do? Hey, I got a great gift, though. I can show you my early Christmas gift from Microsoft. Well, really from GitHub. This is the badge from, they do these, last year they did this too, these badges from GitHub Universe. This is a Pi Moroni.
Did you get that? It looks like it came off a rack next to the Apple iTunes cards at Best Buy. What is that?
This is just the package it came in. It's called Badger 2040 GitHub Universe. So it's one of those mini Raspberry Pis in the back. It's programmable. It's got a USB-C slot, not just for charging. I think you can program it. And then the buttons right now aren't doing anything, but I think you can make them do some other stuff. Right now it's just...
What's the name of this?
So like, this was for this GitHub thing? Universe. Instead of regular, normal badges, these are the badges, I think, at GitHub Universe. And maybe just for special people. They did this last year, too. So it's a little mini computer with an e-ink screen. It says Leo Laporte, Chief Twit, he, him. But I can program it and put other stuff in it too. And you see, it's got the loops, so I can hang it around my neck.
Yeah.
Like a real dork.
Well, of course.
And there's the GitHub kitty cat or whatever that is, whatever kind of animal it is. What is it? Octocat?
Octocat, yeah.
But it only has one arm, so.
Only one's waving. The rest are holding him up.
Oh.
Right.
Of course. Doi. You've solved the case of the missing arms. Thank you, Richard.
I'm very clever.
The new Agatha Christie novel is out.
I also saw a little birdie told me that they're going to expand Copilot in interesting ways on Windows.
Yeah, this is another one of those kind of community things. People get really disgruntled about the no new feature thing. Like, you know, it was only one guy who said this, right? I mean, like, it was taken as such canon.
So disgruntled.
I hear from these people. I literally heard from one of these people as recently as today, actually. I mean, it's funny. It's not funny. It's sad. But anyway, we're getting new features in Windows 10. And the big one, of course, is Copilot. No big surprise there either, right? So they announced that probably last month sometime. It came to the Windows Insider program in the release preview channel. But it's now available as an optional. Actually, I would call it a preview update. It is optional on Windows 10. So if you go into Windows Update and you can go get it if you want to. And if you don't, you'll take it. Oh, you're going to take it. Probably in January, because I don't think they're doing a normal update sequence this month, which is something we're going to talk about in a second. Because if you thought my updating rants from earlier this year were crazy, this might be my favorite one ever coming up soon. But anyway, they're going out on a bang.
I look with anticipation. I cannot wait. Do you have to be you must, I'm sure, be a subscriber to thefabuloustherot.com.
No, I'm going to do it on the show.
Oh, you're going to do it right here in front of us.
I didn't write about this. I just want to enjoy the insanity with an audience.
Hey, John, can you slide Paul over just a little? Because just a little to the left, because he's kind of falling. Maybe John wanted to show the Byte magazine, I think, you know, which is cool, the cover there. But
I might be in a slightly different position myself.
Which is good. There we go. Look at that. I have the power.
I'm supposed to be centered on this thing. I guess I'm not really centered.
I don't know if it's you or us, but it doesn't matter because we can move you. And if I had Copilot on my TriCaster, I could have just said, "Hey, Copilot, could you center up Paul?"
And it would have been. She couldn't because it's not that smart. Oh. So that would have been nice, but no.
TriCaster Copilot.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? A TriCaster Copilot. I'd like that.
It's only a matter of time.
It's complicated. It'd be nice to be able to just. That's the thing. I really don't need an AI to go into dark mode, but I might need an AI to set up a DDR. TriCaster with, you know, I mean, that would be helpful.
I'm not going to get this statistic right because I saw the headline, laughed, and didn't read the story, but it basically amounted to something Microsoft has told me many times over the years, which is that most people don't know even the basics of multitasking or keyboard shortcuts. So, for example, Control-C, Control-V, Control-X are probably fairly common, but once you get past that, I mean, almost nothing. But the headline I saw was, I swear to God, it was India or Japan or somewhere. It said something like 40% of PC users in whatever country do not understand any multitasking or copy paste shortcuts at all, something like that. And I was like, what? Like, but so that's our world. So the idea behind the Copilot in Windows is that we're going to turn people into power users somehow by, you know what you want, but you don't know where to look, even though I actually think searching in Windows is pretty easy. Searching in, you know, the settings app is pretty easy, but apparently it's beyond a lot of people. So. I don't know. But yeah, I don't, the current level of functionality is, in Copilot for Windows anyway, is not great. But you know, maybe it gets there. That's all I'm saying. You never know.
You never know. All right. I think this would be a good place to, do a little break in the action.
Okay.
Because we've completed our Windows 10 segment. And next.
No. When was the last time we did a Windows 10 segment? You're welcome.
Just pay us $100 a month and we can have it for 3 more years. That's all it takes. Windows 11, AI, Microsoft 365, antitrust, Xbox, tips, picks, and brown liquor. Still to come. Mm-hmm. Our son, Michael. Lovely boy, turned 21 while I was gone. I had my 67th birthday, and the next day he had his 21st birthday. And his cousin gave him a bottle of Kraken rum.
Oh, boy, I've had this. Yeah,
it's a spiced rum
thing. Yeah.
Oh, and so we're sitting down. Rum? Yeah, it's spiced. It's like Captain Morgan, I guess, right? I don't know.
I've had a pretty good Kraken, actually. Is it allspice rum?
I don't know. I don't know enough about the Kraken. I just know he's got a bottle of it. Last night, I'm making a nice dinner. I made the Wiener Schnitzel and mashed potatoes and broccoli and very nice. Got dinner. I set it all up and, you know, set the table and all that stuff. And he sits down. Then he gets up. He gets the bottle of Kraken out, gets a Coca-Cola out, pours himself a rum and Coke. Guy's 21 in 1 week, and he's living it up. Yeah. We're going to get him.
Some of my daughter's friends over for New Year's Eve 1 year, and we made cocktails because they had just all turned.
Yeah, it's cute.
And my son came in. He had just brought the drinks in. And he goes, you know, I'm pretty sure these girls have had cocktails before.
they seem like they know what they're doing.
Yep.
I think, though, over time, I'm going to introduce him to some of the fine brown liquors that Richard has brought us and teach him.
It will ruin his life, too.
Yeah, right. I'm not giving him the peanut butter stuff because that's trouble.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a gateway drug.
That's a gateway drug is right.
That and Kraken together might be pretty good.
Don't tell him that. Oh, golly gosh. Our show today brought to you by Lookout. Oh, my goodness. The world has changed, has it not, my friends? And, of course, business has changed forever. Boundaries to where we work disappeared. People working at home. People working in Timbuktu. Everywhere. Not only where we work, but how we work. You know, a lot of Zoom calls, that kind of thing. But there's a consequence. It means your data is always on the move, whether on a device, in the cloud, across networks, or, you know, down at the local coffee shop. And now that's a really nice thing for your workforce. They love it, but it is a challenge, I'm sure you know, for IT security. And that's where Lookout comes in. Lookout helps you control your data, free your workforce, give them what they want without risking security. With Lookout, you'll gain complete visibility into all your data so you can minimize risk from internal and external threats. Plus, and I love this, it helps ensure compliance. By seamlessly securing hybrid work, your organization need not sacrifice productivity for security. Oh, and Lookout makes IT security a lot simpler. It's tough for IT these days with lots of, you know, multi-point tools and legacy stuff. And you're trying to get it all to work. And the truth is, when you're switching back and forth and trying different things, there's always gaps, right? Stuff slips through the gaps. You don't have to worry about that with Lookout. It's a single unified platform that has everything you need, which reduces IT complexity, you know, patches up, heals those gaps, and gives you more time to focus on everything else coming at you. Good data protection. It shouldn't be a cage. It should be a springboard letting you and your organization bound toward a future of your making. Visit lookout.com today. Learn how to safeguard your data, secure hybrid work, and reduce IT complexity. Those are pretty good goals. Lookout.com. We thank Lookout so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Been with us all year, and we really appreciate it. Now, let's get back to the drunks. I mean, to Richard Campbell and Paul Thurrott. And well, I'm just teasing, you know. Windows Weekly. What else is going on here? Windows, should we go to Windows 11? Should we go up one?
Yeah, actually, we're going to go all the way to Windows 12.
Have they still announced that, right? Have they?
No. Yeah. Apparently, so Zach Bowden over at Windows Central, the guy I really trust, he's got good sources, has a report about a major Windows release coming next year that may or may not be called Windows 12. Apparently, they're still debating that name internally.
Oh, interesting.
And if you think about it, you know, they put all the AI stuff in Windows 11 to begin with. They're stretching out Windows 10 now. I don't know, maybe stick with Windows 11. But whatever, the name in some ways doesn't matter. But some interesting, the big thing in here to me is that he lists a bunch of features that they're planning for this more advanced Copilot. I was just complaining about how silly that is. AI-powered Windows search, enhanced live captions, which is also already a great feature. AI-powered wallpapers, AI-powered video and games using NPUs to improve the resolution of the perceived resolution of games. That's all great. But here's the thing. This is the thing I'm actually really excited about. They are apparently moving away from these stupid moment updates. So they're thinking about going back just to like annual feature updates again, which, you know, I would have to say if the one thing that to me has, well, no, there's two, right? So the two things to me that have defined the past 12 months have been AI, obviously. But in the Windows space, it's like we're going to update Windows randomly every 7 days now. And I really like them to kind of step back from that. And it's possible, according to this report, that they might. So they're at least thinking about it. So good. So that's that. So that's kind of interesting. So we'll see. This whole year has been a lot of Windows 12 speculation. When or if they will announce it, what it's going to look like, when does it come out, yada, yada, yada. But whatever this thing is called, it is coming next year. There was a rumor, I think it was Acer might have blurted out that Windows 12 was coming in July, which is impossible, but that's Microsoft. Nothing's impossible. But it's more likely that they would announce it mid-year and ship in, you know, October timeframe like they usually do. But I expected to hear about this year. And I think, you know, looking at this report, the reason we didn't perhaps was that they were just so focused on getting out the door the stuff they did ship that this stuff is now sort of up in the air, and, you know, we'll see. So I'm
kind of smitten with a Windows 11 SE.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, R2, maybe.
There you go.
Service Pack 1. I don't know. Anyway, that's good stuff. So this is my favorite story of the week, though. And the story I was telling, I think, before we were recording is that I woke up on Monday morning. So Monday morning? Was it yesterday morning? I guess it was Monday morning, yesterday morning. I'm losing track of days. One of those mornings. Anyway, and Laurent, the guy who writes the news on my site, had published a story about, I guess, yeah, it was Monday, not Tuesday. It was Monday, about a new preview cumulative update for Windows 11. That adds a bunch of new Copilot features. Except, here's the thing. We spent this year talking about the changing schedule and how different things are. And we've talked about such terms as week D, right? This at some point in 2023, they switched to a formal schedule where preview updates ship on the Tuesday of week D, the fourth Tuesday of the month. And then 2 weeks later, roughly, or three, depending on, you know, the month and how the dates are. On week B, Patch Tuesday, the date everyone knows, that's when that thing ships in stable, right, for everybody. So if you are a seeker, you can go into Windows Update, turn on that get updates as soon as they're available, and you can get these new features 2 to 3 weeks earlier than the public. You also probably remember that the schedule did not hold, that there were many, many times where a month, you know, 2 weeks by, and they didn't release that thing out of preview, and 23H2 was one of those things. The Moment 4 update for 22H2 was one of those things. But here's the thing. This is what's beautiful about this. This week D update for November shipped on a Monday in December because of Microsoft. Like, are you kidding me? And here's the reason. There was a holiday, right? So we had Thanksgiving the week before. It was actually 2 weeks before, right? Or we'll call it 10 days before. So the 23rd was a Thursday, and I guess they were just off, and then maybe they were still off the next Tuesday. So they're like, you know what? We'll just do it in December. And
week D comes the first week of December.
Week D is, I guess it's week F. No, what is that? It's week. I guess it's technically week E, but it's not week. It's week A of December. Mm-hmm. So alongside this announcement, Microsoft also said, hey, we're not going to be doing any more of these this month because it's the end of the year. We need some time off. Apparently, they didn't take enough time off over the holidays. So the non-preview version of this update.
And they're a couple of weeks behind anyway, right?
Like, yeah.
What are you going to do now?
I don't even know. Like, you know, you couldn't even speculate. When do you think this thing will just ship? I don't know. Who can say? I'm just going to stop caring about it and whatever. So the Copilot stuff is actually pretty good. So you may remember that, or you may know that Copilot does not work with Alt Tab. So they're going to fix that. Copilot is stuck on the right side of the screen. If you have one screen, two screens, 10 screens, doesn't matter. It's just on that one screen. They're going to give you the ability to move it around, move it to different screens. We'll remember where it was, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's a preview update, so not everyone's getting it, obviously, but I'm going to guess January, honestly, at the earliest, by which I mean, of course, anytime, because I guessed with 23H2 that it would come out. Well, I ended up being right, actually, but in November, but they technically shipped it on the 31st, except that too was a preview update. Let's not get buried in that. Anyway, I just think it's beautiful. This is going to end the year on this, like the week D update for Windows 11 is in November, is going out in December.
So and also, they've got it all under control now.
Do they?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not even drunk driving anymore. It's like blindfolded driving, you know?
Well, it does sound like it's going to be completely revised next year. So there'll be a
new system. I don't have much to report from like beta. Dev channel, anything like that. There was a beta channel release on, was it Monday or Tuesday? Something, there's some Copilot stuff. No, I mean, there's nothing really new. Widget settings, blah, blah, blah. There is, there's been some reports out that the long awaited ability to turn off the news feed in widgets is coming. I think this is one of those things that might be filtering out to people in the Insider program randomly because they hate everybody. But that suggests that we'll get that in the next month or two as well. And that's going to be a nice thing because honestly, if you go to the widgets board and it's just your widgets, like that is pretty useful. Meanwhile, this newsfeed is yikes, not great. So in fact, let me turn that off because it's a crime against humanity. So that's happening. The earnings reports for the previous quarter have been so stretched out this quarter that I will just start reporting on this quarter before they're over, apparently, because Dell just announced their quarterly earnings. Actually, their
for last quarter.
Yeah, but their year, I mean, their quarter ends on November 2nd because they, because calendars don't matter.
So 30 days is fair. That's fair.
Yeah. Dell is an interesting company. They have two major business units, and it basically breaks down to PCs and things that are not PCs, which is right. Business servers,
NASes
and services, etc. Yeah. I would say their client group, which is PCs, was 12 billion in revenues compared to 8.5 billion for the other group. Both of these things are down year over year, double digits, etc. They see a broader recovery, particularly in the United States, particularly in corporate with businesses in the second half of next year. And I think, I don't know if I have this here, but I believe the way their business breaks down for PCs anyway is, it's even worse than I thought. Their commercial business for PCs, for businesses, is almost three times as big as their consumer business. So they're primarily a business PC maker.
Yeah. They have their own leasing systems and stuff. Like they're good at selling a lot of machines.
Yes.
Companies and locking them in to steadily replace them too.
Yeah. And so related to this, Richard, you bought a computer.
Finally.
Just so people know as a background, Richard has been using a Surface Book 2 for the duration. I believe that machine dates back to at the latest 2014, but probably 2013.
It's an antique.
That's not right. No, maybe that's not right.
Book 2 is from 2018.
Computer terms, that's
pretty old.
I always said computers, you know, dog years is 7 years. I always said computers like 15 years. So a 5-year-old laptop is really 75 years old. I think that's about right. Oh, I see what you're
saying. Like they're dog years.
It's dog years. Yeah, yeah. It's laptop years.
Yeah.
Double dog years.
Dog years. That's good. I like it.
Yeah.
So what did you get?
We went with because she who must be obeyed also needed a laptop, and she does CAD, so she wanted lots of horsepower, needed a big GPU.
So you get, get twin laptops?
Oh, yeah, we got matchies. Yeah, we definitely. It's romantic, isn't it?
You don't have to, you know. You could get something different.
I offered, and she's like, no, let's just get two the same. Okay. So we both got Surface.
Wow.
What'd you get?
Surface Studio 2s.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the Surface, the new laptop. With the 4060s in them, so they got lots of horsepower.
Oh, that 4060, nice. No battery life.
Not compared to a Mac. Goodness knows, but you know,
do they?
But it has an MPU.
It does.
Oh, nice. So, that's important.
Remember, this was kind of a. It will end the year as being the only, I believe, I'm positive, the only 13th gen mobile chipset from Intel. PC based on a 13th gen mobile chipset from Intel that has an MPU. It's an add-on part. It's not integrated into the processor. It's actually something they added to the
microcontroller. I am of the opinion, and I put my money where my opinion was, which is a little uncomfortable, but really, at this point, no, you really shouldn't buy a computer without AI processor of some kind in it. Because
not that we have a lot of software that's utilizing it. Right?
But no, I know, but it will, is what I think. I downloaded a local Lambda model onto my MacBook, and I'm playing with it and doing some stuff. And I think ultimately you may well do a lot of local ML stuff. And furthermore, that means you should probably get pretty big hard drives because these things, the models are pretty huge.
Eat up some space,
yeah.
We did go terabyte, and part of what made us pull the trigger was Black Friday. Like the discounts were 10%, 10-15%. Like they were substantial.
Nice. Oh, that's good.
And that was just a forcing function to say we need to decide. It's time, so we decided.
Good.
That seems like a good choice. Was it a 14? Yeah. Was it 14 inch? What's the screen size? Because it's 3. Is it 3x2 still on the?
Yeah, it's a funny. It's an odd resolution.
I actually love the 3x2. That's actually, to me, the best reason to get a Surface. I think that's a really nice aspect ratio for desktop. The
screen was a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used to always be 3,000 by 2,000, but it's probably higher res than that.
This is the Surface, the desktop.
This is 2,400 by 1,600.
Oh, I'm sorry, 2,400 by 1,600. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either. They've invented terms for these things.
It's just a weird resolution. I've got a 4K external monitor sitting beside it.
So you don't. It doesn't matter then. Yeah. And this, it's got the new tilty thing. Doesn't detach anymore though, right?
No.
Which is good.
I wanted that.
Yeah, but that thing.
Not that he ever did that, right?
Like no. Did it once as a parlor trick, and then you said one, and then you did it again by mistake because sometimes they'd come loose, but. No one ever uses it.
I would occasionally do it to taunt iPad Pro users. I'd take the screen off, turn it around, and put it down, and then hang the screen, hang the keyboard off the back of the airline seat in front of me, so it would just stay in place.
That's a nice trick, actually. I love doing that. Yeah. Have you used the tent mode where it covers up the keyboard yet? You have.
Yeah, yeah. I set that up watching. I'm going through all the MCU in chronological order because I'm a sadist.
Oh,
and, so I
don't care if it's a bad movie. It's third in a series, and I'm watching it.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to mix the TV shows in with.
Oh, you're even doing the WandaVision and all of that. Wow.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's a ton of them. Wow. That's great. Yeah. So, yeah, I knocked out a few episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in tent mode.
So let me just build this so we could see kind of the spec here. So 13 gen with this is a 4050, so let's go to 4060. Does it say where you add the NPU, or it's just...
Oh, no, it's in.
It's just there.
Yeah.
So all of them have the NPU, or no? Yes.
Yep.
Okay, because that's Microsoft. They want you to have neural processing.
That was the only meaningful hardware announcement I thought at that show is this, we're shipping a high-end laptop with an NPU.
32 gigs or 64 gigs of RAM? How much RAM?
64.
Yeah, of course. And again,
we went back and forth on whether to go Ada versus the GeForce, but I think the GeForce just has more generalized support.
What's the Ada? It's an RTX 2000. Okay,
that's more of a workstation GPU. Okay. Arguably, that's
what your wife needs for AutoCAD, right?
Yeah, she's using the 4060 is well supported by the CAD program she uses.
Yeah, yeah. Remember that you had to have a Quadra.
Yeah.
To do this AutoCAD stuff and so forth. And they really were the same thing, but the same chip, but they.
This is a big thing. I don't know a lot about this market, but when I talk to HP and Lenovo about their workstation stuff, it's, getting these machines certified for those products is a big deal, obviously.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, I don't know what Microsoft did along those lines, but these chipsets are all, they're all designed for this. So I'm sure it's great for her stuff.
Well, congratulations. Have they arrived? They've arrived. Thanks. Yeah, you're using them. Yeah.
I got mine just before we left, and hers arrived after we left.
It's so a nice feeling to get a new laptop. Yeah. That's so fun.
And like the day before you're going to fly out for a week and go, I am going to go fly to
close to the sun.
This is going to take a while. Yeah, exactly.
What do you do, Richard, to build your new Windows machine? Do you have a script or use Chocolaty or Winget? What do you do?
Yeah, I'm a Chocolaty and Box Starter guy, but I ended up tearing a bunch of it apart just because more M365 now. Yeah. So it ended up being a pretty manual process.
Oh, that's
it's I would good think to do it, that every once in a while.
Yeah, you know? Start from scratch. Yeah,
yeah,
it's painful.
Yeah, I do it all the time. That's my whole life.
Yeah, I'm starting to understand why Paul's angry all the time now.
Yeah. When I got the,
I spent 30 minutes configuring something so I could take one screenshot. You know, yesterday. No, I mean that's my life. Like that's what it's like.
Oh, Paul.
No, I mean it. Like that's
I gotta say is don't ever do this retreat, this Hoffman process thing I did, because you will never go back to that. You will say, "What was I doing that for?"
What? Right. I don't need to be confronted by the futility of my life. Let me just keep going. It's important to have forward momentum.
You should not get enlightened, my friend, because you may have regrets. Let's just put it that way.
I help people occasionally. I don't feel that I've wasted
my making a difference. No, that's good. You're sacrificing.
You got that screenshot because nobody else was going to get it. By golly, it needed to exist.
Nobody's even going to see it. It's the most pointless thing in the world. It's a feature no one can use.
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Thurrott is doing this for you. He's sacrificing his health, his happiness.
I'm not saying I'm Jesus, but you could say it. I just want to get it right.
It's definitely, dealing with your own compulsions there.
Oh, that's so funny.
I didn't take that screenshot for any of you. I took it for me.
It's for me.
Right. Well, no, it's like, I'm going to make this happen. I don't care how long it takes.
You have to be complete. Yeah.
It's a completionist thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel your pain, Paul. That's all I'm saying.
It's hard. It's hard being this OCD. I don't know.
We all are. I think that's something we all have in common.
Sure.
Let's take a little break. Well, let me see. We got AI. Let's do the AI segment. I feel like that's going to be deep, rich, and full of goodness.
Okay. I don't know.
Or maybe I'm wrong. Could be wrong.
Yeah, we'll see. So one of the
we got to talk about the board seat.
This was one of the, when all that stuff was happening and we were all saying before it kind of wound down, Microsoft's going to win here either way. They're either going to, he's going to go back, Sam Altman is, we're going to get a seat on the board, or those guys are all coming to Microsoft and whatever. Yeah. And that's not what happened. So not exactly. So Microsoft is getting a seat on the board, but it's a non-voting representation.
That's
so they don't
interesting.
Actually get to decide any of the direct, right. So I don't know what to say about that.
Is it purely advisory? What is a non-voting seat?
Yeah.
I don't even know what
it's
that is.
You know, like when you're an older person and you go to college, you go to classes, but you're auditing for the classes.
They're auditing the board meetings. Yeah,
that's right. That's what it's like.
I think the seat is there just so that the next time they fire Sam Altman, you know before the press knows.
That's probably a good thing.
Also, I like to think that the Microsoft representative will be sitting in the dark, and when they say things, they'll make a decision, and the guy will go... And then they'll say, why don't we go the other direction on that one?
They've got to have some input.
The question you got to ask is, when they gave him $1 billion, that was probably worth a board seat. Then they gave him $2 billion more.
Yeah.
He probably should have gotten a board seat. Mm-hmm. But earlier this year, they gave him $10 billion. Yeah. Like, when do you get the board seat?
This is the unique and bizarre structure. This company is so weirdly organized. It makes Google look like a normal company.
Go ahead.
And it's broken, right? Like, listen, these systems are designed with financial incentives for a reason. It's how you make a rational company. That's why, Altman shouldn't be touting that he doesn't have any options in the company. What are you talking about?
I know. It's
a nonprofit
culture. I don't quite.
It's a nonprofit.
Well, it is, but they also have a profit.
There's a profit section of this nonprofit company. That's part of the reason they didn't have anybody on the board.
Which, by the way, is the biggest, that's the thing that they share with Alphabet. Alphabet is basically a nonprofit. It's just that Google makes all the money.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Anthropic is set up the same way. Anthropic is a public benefit corporation. I mean, I think the really good article in the New York Times, long piece about how this all started And the fight, that's weirdest.
Between like Elon Musk and Sam Altman.
And I think they're up here at Calistoga Ranch in Napa where Lisa and I got married. Mm-hmm. It sure sounded like that. Where Elon and Larry Page are at this kind of conference and they get into this heated, like all night debate around the campfire.
I believe they have not talked since this fight.
That's right. That was the big breach. And by the way, there's more. Sam Altman and Elon aren't talking either. Elon apparently does that a lot. But Larry Page says, no, we got a plan for the new species, the AI. And
which is like, okay, like, settle down. You can't even fix your voice problems.
You're nuts. Like, you know. We got to protect humanity. And Larry Page, and this apparently was the final straw, calls Elon a speciesist, like a racist, only he's a speciesist. He's like, and Elon stalks off and they never talk again. And then both start, you know, their AI efforts.
That's how OpenAI was born. And literally is.
That's how the bagel got its hole. And then there's a new piece in the New Yorker, which is quite good, by Charles Duhigg. Mm-hmm. Let me read you the lead. Around 11:30 a.m. on the Friday before Thanksgiving, Microsoft's chief executive, Satya Nadella, was having his weekly meeting with senior leaders when a panicked colleague told him, pick up the phone. An executive from OpenAI, a company in which Microsoft invested $13 billion, was calling to explain that within the next 20 minutes, the company's board would announce it had fired Sam Altman, OpenAI's CEO and co-founder. And this is the line I love. It was the start of a five-day crisis that some people at Microsoft began calling the turkey shoot cluster frack. Well, except...
I'm sure that's what they called it.
Yeah, close anyway. You get the idea. I don't want to say the F word.
Yeah.
The turkey shoot cluster frack.
Yep.
It's a great piece. You should read it. It's really good. I'm loving both that Times piece and this piece because we're kind of... I knew this would happen. I didn't think it happened this fast, finding out what happened, right?
This is we're also kind of mythologizing what's happening in real time, which I think is a first for the tech industry anyway. And there were these periods of time that were richly documented, you know, obviously the Microsoft Apple early days, the Microsoft antitrust stuff. There was lots of books about that. These days you see profiles in all the famous rich billionaire tech people, whatever. But I mean, I don't remember we talked about this anymore, but this is not just unique in business history, but I think it's one of the craziest things that's ever happened, not just in the tech industry. I mean, just in business, you know, and people are going to study this for a long time. And the problem with it is it's a lot like saying, I want to be just like Steve Jobs, because no one can be like that, really. And in this case, there is no other company that will ever be structured this way because it makes no sense. So there's not a lot of learnings here, you know, other than maybe don't structure your company like that. Was just common sense anyone could have.
No, it's documentation of a train wreck. It's that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah,
there's a paragraph about, so Nadella next, after talking to Adam D'Angelo at the board, called Kevin Scott. And Scott had already heard the news. They set up a video call with other Microsoft executives. Was Altman's firing the result of tensions over speed versus safety? Some employees at OpenAI and Microsoft were worried about that.
Yeah. Well, no, I for good reason.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Should we risk? Go ahead.
It's never been revealed what actually made them decide it's time to fire him.
Like, yeah.
There's been all this innuendo, this notion that someone, some engineer ran in and said, we did it. This thing is sentient, you know, or whatever. And it's like, that's not.
I actually like Kevin Scott's point of view. He says, and this is again from Charles Duhigg writing in The New Yorker, Kevin Scott respected these concerns to a point. The discourse around AI, he believed, had been strangely focused on science fiction scenarios, destroying humanity, and had largely ignored the technology's potential to, quote, level the playing field, as Scott put it. For people who knew it or knew what they wanted computers to do but lacked the training to make it happen, he felt AI, with its ability to converse with users in plain language, could be transformative.
Kevin Scott is a guy who was a shadow on the wall that no one could tell you his name or what he did. And he may emerge as kind of like this new Ray Ozzie type person now. He saw this very early on. He had this relationship. He brought him to, I believe, to Satya Nadella, got that thing going. I mean, he was so central to this. Yeah. And he's a guy at Microsoft who I think most people, even Microsoft followers, are like, who? You know?
Former CTO of LinkedIn.
So in this call, they decided they had three options. This is really like fly on the wall stuff. And knowing the New Yorker, I think it's got to be pretty accurate because they're very careful with fact checking and so forth.
This is not the New York Post, you mean?
New York, something else? New Yorker. Yeah, it's not the Post.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So on the video call, they began outlining possible responses. Plan A, stabilize the situation, support the new CEO, Moradi, and then working with her to see
which they did do publicly, by the way, very quickly.
Working with her to see if the startups board might reverse its decision or at least explain its rash move.
They also did.
If the board refused to do either, plan B, use the leverage that the company had to get Altman reappointed as CEO and change the governance structure, which was clearly problematic.
They sort of did that, but not really, right? That's the thing that's weird. They're on the board, but they don't have any decision-making capabilities. They don't really, I guess it gives them an early warning. I think Richard said that about, or someone said that about any potential weird stuff that might happen down the road. But honestly, I don't know. It's surprising how little they got out of it.
Duhigg's source. Well, plan C was, by the way, to hire Altman and his entire team. That's the thing that didn't happen.
You understand they actually implemented everything you just said at one point or another.
Yeah.
They literally did all of that.
They did it all. Yeah. And that's in fact what it said, that everybody agreed all three choices were strong. We just wanted to get back to normal. That he had an insider, I think, on the call. And the insider, let's see, we just want to get back to normal, the insider told me.
We're really getting bogged down here.
Okay, sorry. Let's put some adults in charge and get back to what we had.
Which is comical coming from Microsoft. But yeah, no, fair enough.
Anyway, read the article. Great stuff. I'm sorry.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
Yeah. This is the high drama of our industry. I mean,
there's a whole, this is really almost a profile of Kevin Scott, which is interesting,
Again, and that's amazing because I don't think anyone, especially the people who read the New Yorker, that's just a name, So I think that's fantastic. I like the guy. I think he's, just like Satya Nadella here is cementing a legacy. I mean, I think Kevin Scott is too, it's great.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Really good story. And there's a lot of other Microsoft deets, including some GitHub stuff. So recommend.
Yeah. We mentioned earlier
I'm sorry. One more thing.
It's okay.
A really good picture of Kevin Scott.
Where is this?
This is the New Yorker article. They sent out a photographer. Maybe this is his corporate photo. And I can't pull it up here, unfortunately. But, he's standing out in his field looking pensive.
Is he standing with Stephen Elop? Because if he is, run away.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hijack it, I thought it was really.
Okay. This is
here it is. Here's Mr. Scott looking pensive out in the field.
Yes. Yep. Oh man.
It's not, I've never seen a picture of him. It's not how I imagined him, I'll be honest.
He's
got the hipster little Tim.
Yeah, the little under the lip thing on there. Yep. No, this is what I mean. Nobody knows this guy.
Who is this guy? He's their CTO, right?
Adam. Yep. He's in the AI CTO space. There's a bunch of CTOs at Microsoft. It's complicated. Okay. He does run the office of the CTO.
Right.
We had him on .NET Rock years ago when he was first at Microsoft.
Yeah. They talk about Copilot and releasing Bing and all that stuff. So it's a good article for Microsofties. On we go. I will get out of your way. Go ahead. Do your thing.
No.
Let me stop you.
You're not in the way.
I'm in the way. I know I am.
So back in February, Microsoft had that big Bing event, which was the coming out party for all the AI stuff. Since then, they've announced, I think it was Donna or someone said, 117 different co-pilots. They've rebranded twice. The thing that was Bing Chat and also later Bing Chat Enterprise is now called Microsoft Copilot. This is the foundational layer of their Copilot services. the base layer of such things as Copilot in Microsoft 365, Copilot in Windows 11, et cetera, et cetera. That thing became generally available last week. It's free. Interestingly, it's free. You know, that part of it's free, right? So you can get that through the Copilot in Windows 11. You can get it through Bing now. It is. So what's interesting here, this is sort of like the ESU story from earlier where they have this kind of commercial product and they're giving it, or in this case, giving it to consumers as well. So they're actually going to provide paying Microsoft 365 business customers on certain SKUs, E3, E5, A3, A5, et cetera, they're going to give them what's called commercial data protection as part of their offering. And this is just a, it's just designed to basically indemnify you if it does anything that people say you've stolen from them. Microsoft will handle that for you. They're offering it to consumers as well for free, which is kind of interesting. And it's coming to Copilot on commercial, I'm sorry, for commercial customers who just have Entra IDs, what used to be called Azure Active Directory. So they're just trying to get it out in the world and say, hey, it's safe. Don't worry. Everything's fine.
Yeah, and if it's not, we'll make it up to you.
We'll do, so, yeah. Well,
the classic one here is you make a rendering with DALL-E 3 of something.
Right.
And it's the Mona Lisa. Somebody claims that it had copyrighted material in it.
Right.
Microsoft's going to be there with you for it.
Yeah. Right. So that's cool. I mean, I guess, although if you bring up the Copilot, so the interesting thing about this is if you bring up Copilot in Windows, it still says preview. And that's because technically the stuff that's Windows is still in preview. So the underlying Copilot is actually not finalized, but generally available, supported, et cetera. But that actual product is still in preview. It's confusing, but anyway, it's a lot less confusing than it would have been if they had stuck with the original names. I can say it for sure. I don't know a lot about, this ChatGPT 4 Turbo. Or I guess this is GPT 4 Turbo, which is the latest OpenAI model.
Yeah.
Is now supported in, well, Copilot. I almost said Bing. It's going to take a while to get over that one. It's available in Copilot. So this includes new models, or a new model for DALL-E 3, which is the text to image model that OpenAI has, but also Microsoft has as part of Bing Creator, which is probably not the name anymore. There's an experimental new Bing feature related to this called Deep Search, which is sort of like Microsoft's version of the, I think it's called the Search Generative Experience that Google has, where you're doing kind of search and AI in the same set of results and they kind of commingle them together. It's not going to replace standard Bing search anytime soon, but it's something you can kind of test out for yourself. I'm sure we're going to talk about this. Yeah, there's a coming Google announcement that's very similar to this. So it's all very similar. It's like multimodal search stuff. There's code interpretation. There's lots of kind of features in here that maps very, very closely to what Google is doing with what they call Gemini, which is their kind of, I guess we'll call it a ChatGPT alternative, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that's all coming.
Yeah, I didn't know what it meant. I was very curious what that all was about. So,
yeah. So Google was not expected to announce this now. Yeah. all the news was they're going to wait till next year. And then, I mean, I don't know if it's because of GPT-4 Turbo or whatever, but they came out with this today concurrently with a Pixel feature update because there's a version of Gemini, which is an AI model that it's built that will run on the Pixel 8 Pro. That they just released. You might remember they made a promise about doing on-device AI model on the Pixel at some point. So that's available starting today. I guess it's rolling out now. But Gemini comes in three different sizes. Ultra, which is not available yet. Pro, which is. And Nano, which is or will be soon locally on devices, or at least one device. And this is their, you know, this is their, they're like, you know, we know you like open AI and what they're doing, but this is, you know, this is our stuff. And they have some, you know, side-by-side benchmark results that show that they usually beat ChatGPT-4. I don't know if that includes the GPT-4 Turbo stuff or whatever. They're just going for this. So in real-world terms, unless you're a developer, because you can get going on this as a developer, this stuff is rolling out behind the scenes to a variety of Google products and services, starting with Bard, which it will use for reasoning, planning, understanding, and other things. It's only in English, but it's worldwide. Search generative experience, which I just mentioned, a 40% improvement in latency reduction, also only in English, but that will happen over time. And then Gemini Nano is coming to the Pixel 8 Pro starting today. And the real world impact of that is a new Summarize feature in the Recorder app. By the way, Summarize is a feature I'm starting to see everywhere.
Yeah.
When I scroll through my, it is a great feature. The only thing I don't like about it is I trigger it by mistake a lot. Like I almost want to, don't ruin the story.
No, I want, you know, but, I want the whole thing.
Yeah, and I actually think that's pretty cool. So, that you're going to see that in a bunch of different places in the future, but, also Smart Reply and Gboard starting with WhatsApp, but they're going to bring this to search, you know, ads, Chrome, Duet, and probably a bunch of other things, early next year. So, developers can get going on this now. There's a new, this is a very Apple name, but there's an AI Core API that's an early preview for Android 14. Developers can get started on today if they want to work with on-device AI, or they can work with Gemini Pro through a Gemini API in Google AI Studio, which is, I think it's a web-based software development environment, I believe. I think that's what that is. Probably not exactly a Visual Studio Code, but something like that. Google just kind of exploded out of nowhere today with this stuff. I got a lot of criticism this year for lagging behind and really for, you know, in their words, trying to be safe, right? They were like, you know, this stuff is, we don't feel like it's ready for the world, but I guess it is because everyone else is doing it. And so, you know, they're making the case.
The world was ready for it because they were happily jumping on board. So,
well, that's what happened, right? Google said, oh my God, they're using GPT and they don't seem to care. So hallucinate away. By the way, I could speak for everybody when I say thank you, Google, for bringing back the turbo button to our PCs.
Right, exactly. And also the megahertz wars, so great. Actually, it was OpenAI that did that. GPT-4 turbo, hit the turbo. And watch the lights dim in your neighborhood as the AI kicks on. I think the world right now is divided between the AI naysayers, the AI proponents are like, yeah, you know, and then the people in the middle are like, what's happening? Are the robots taking over? Is that what's happening? You know, because I don't think anyone, I think most people don't even understand what's happening. All they know is like AI is going to be the man of the year or something in Time Magazine.
Actually, it is. It was, right?
Oh, are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
I was just kidding. Oh, that's funny. Okay, maybe I heard that and it was in the back of my brain. So.
unless I'm hallucinating. Remember, I'm getting out of touch.
Oh, like AI? Probably. I mean,
AI. Somebody said
that's funny.
Pretty sure Time's Person of the Year is Taylor Swift for obvious reasons.
Which I think we can all agree is probably AI. So that makes sense.
They made enough deep models.
They may not have named the Person of the Year yet. Here's the short list. Let's see. This is from Time Magazine. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to accept cookies. Excuse me. The short list: Hollywood strikers, Xi Jinping. Every year, right? Taylor Swift, Sam Altman, Trump.
I thought he was CEO of the year.
Trump?
Trump prosecutors, not Trump. Trump prosecutors.
Okay, I was gonna say, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Barbie. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Please, Lord, make Barbie Person of the Year. Please, I beg of you. Vladimir Putin, King Charles III, Jerome Powell. Okay, now just a little poll. How many of you know who the hell Jerome Powell is?
I don't mean to be ignorant. I don't know who that
is. He's the chairman of the Federal Reserve, but no one need know his name.
And no time has announced that Taylor Swift is...
They announced it.
Okay.
Person of the Year.
Okay.
I guess, you know, they know.
Altman is the CEO.
Oh, they announced it today. Okay. Well, I guess I understand that. You know,
Well, someday in a Terminator movie, we'll look back on this year as the time when everything changed and it'll be okay.
Yeah. They were all worried about Taylor Swift when I was taking over the world.
Yeah. Now they're going to send back the Terminator to kill Sam Altman or whatever, and it'll be a completely different story.
Yeah. Person of the Year, Taylor and her cat, apparently.
Her cat. Cat probably demanded to be in this picture by yowling.
All right, can I take a break now that we've had our cultural moment, our moment in the culture?
Yes.
And then yes, Xbox still to come and more good stuff with Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, Mr. Richard Campbell from Run His Radio. Our show today brought to you by our studio sponsors for the year 2023. They're our sponsor of the year in some respects. Well, we love all our sponsors, but thank you, ACI Learning, for buying the studio naming rights. You may remember them as IT Pro TV. What a great company. We've been fans and friends since they were founded. ACI Learning covers all your audit, cybersecurity, and information technology training needs. Of course, you already know the name IT Pro TV from many years of advertising. Well, they're now part of ACI Learning. IT Pro has been able to take advantage of that to expand its capabilities, providing more support for IT teams. ACI keeps the courses current in every area, including Microsoft Cloud, AWS, CompTIA, of course, cybersecurity, networking. And if you have an IT team to train, you got to know about ACI Learning. IT teams significantly benefit from IT Pro and ACI Learning. They keep all the fun and personality of IT Pro TV, but they've amplified, they've added to with their robust solutions for all your training needs. Your team will be entertained and informed at the same time, which your team loves, while they train with short-form content and now over 7,200 hours of current content to choose from. You asked, and ACI delivered just in time to wrap up your annual CPE. ACI is re-releasing, get this, their entire audit catalog in shorter, easier to digest versions. That means your CPE exams for each course will now be faster too. Check out their new audit courses and lab releases this month, including Certified Information Systems Auditor and CompTIA's Security Plus. Get the completely updated. Get the full scoop on how ACI can help you navigate the audit world by visiting acilearning.com/blog. IT Pro TV and ACI Learning keep your business from risking redundancy by giving you the most up-to-date certifications and courses possible, provide you with a personal account manager so they can ensure that you are not wasting anyone's time. Your account manager will work with you to ensure your team focuses on exactly the skills that matter to your organization, leaving unnecessary training behind. Bottom line, keep your IT team up to date with the speed of technology. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit listeners. You're going to get a free trial, and the discounts are amazing, up to 65% off. 65% off an IT Pro Enterprise Solution Plan. Now, the discount's based on the size of your team. So here's the deal. Fill out the form. They'll tell you exactly how much you save. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. We thank them so much for a great year. They've really made a big difference in keeping this show and all of our shows on. go.acilearning.com/twit. Send them your thanks. Now, back to the boys. Whoa. One of the boys is now a, what do they call that in the biz?
Ah,
you know, those
weird because I can.
You can see him? It might be
I
us.
I can see him in the.
Yeah. Those are the, you know. Remember the old days, Paul? You're old enough to remember when the TV.
I'm old enough that I have been watching Late Night with David Letterman or whatever, and it went to the playing of the national anthem with a flag blowing in the wind. And then, to that. Yeah. Yep.
Or a test pattern. That's what that's called. Yep.
Yeah. Test pattern. Right.
It's kind of funny. Now, kids, they don't even watch TV.
It's good and bad, right? So one of the things I think my kids have missed out on is this shared cultural experience thing that was common to our generation.
Well, that's true.
Where you'd come into work or school or whatever on a Monday morning and everyone saw the same exact show over the weekend.
What did Johnny say last night? Oh my God, did you see that?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not like everything was better in the past.
Oh yeah, it was. No, Paul, it was.
But it wasn't my past, that's for sure. One time I showed them, I used to wake up on Saturday mornings and watch cartoons, and it was just Saturday morning was cartoons. It was all morning. It was great. In the afternoon where I live, we had Creature Double Feature in the afternoon. It was all these awesome old Japanese horror movies or whatever, or monster movies. And you know, this was like something we just had. And I played some Warner Brothers cartoons for my kids a couple of years ago. I don't think they'd ever even seen them. You know, the Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner and Bugs Bunny and all that stuff. And I don't know, to me, these are just like, I learned about opera music from this or whatever. Or, you know, I mean, I feel bad they didn't have that. That's all. It's too bad.
I learned about opera from
Three Stooges.
Gilligan's Island.
Yeah. Neither a borrower nor a lender be. This much is true.
Anyway.
My favorite Gilligan's Island scene is the one where Gilligan is wearing a garlic necklace and he says, you know, skipper says, why are you wearing a, why are you wearing that?
Well, Bobby, why are you wearing a garlic necklace?
Keep away the, he says, to keep away the crocodiles. He's like, we don't have any crocodiles on this island. He's like, see, it works.
Gilligan. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. He had
genius.
It going on.
Genius.
Microsoft 365 / cloud.
Yeah, this was originally, I was mixing in some AI stuff before and I kind of separated it a little differently. So these are kind of Microsoft 365 adjacent, but back in 2017, Microsoft says they released an app called Seeing AI on the iPhone. And this was a really cool, this is like the scene in Amelie where the star of the movie grabs a blind guy and walks him around Paris and describes everything that's happening to him. And he kind of lights up because it's like this thing he doesn't get to experience. And it provides verbal descriptions of things for people who are blind or have low vision. And they just released it on Android. It took them that long, at least 6 years.
They did it with a keynote with an employee of Microsoft.
Yes, and it was a great moment.
It's integrated in the glasses. Yeah, it was a great keynote moment. This is you know, Satya got known for these huge heartstring closers.
Yes. Yep. And then it kind of went silent for a while. But it appears that this thing is back in like really active development. They're going to be adding a bunch of new features to both sides of the mobile fence there. They've added new features with this release too. So it's a lot more languages. They're going to double the number of languages in 2024. But this thing can identify, people, everyday objects, faces and expressions. It can describe what those are, like, you know, Bob is smiling or whatever, provide descriptions to photos. It can read mail, scan barcodes, kind of goes on and on. And it's a really long list of stuff. And of course the guy who runs this, the guy who is the CEO of Seeing AI at Microsoft is of course someone with serious, you know, vision issues. So it's just one of those heartwarming, great things. Like it's kind of hard to, you know, it's just neat. That's excellent. So if you have that kind of a, I guess we're not really calling these disabilities anymore, but if you have this kind of an issue, you might want to check into this if you're running on. Well,
but also, I mean, it's the ability for software to see and recognize what it's seeing. And there's a bunch of applications for that.
Yep. And this is a really good one. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Nice. And then this one's super adjacent in that it's not really Microsoft, but Evernote, which was kind of a pioneer in the note take. Well, not really. I mean, OneNote was up before Evernote, but whatever. Evernote was a big deal for a long time. And they've made a lot of mistakes over the years, but they have indeed decided to restrict their free users to one notebook and 50 notes because they want people to pay, which is reasonable. But
that's basically unusable. I mean, 50 notes, come on.
Yeah. So the problem is there are really good solutions like OneNote and Notion and probably many others that
how about
work
Loop?
For free. And Loop. I stand by what I said earlier, Leo. So Loop is still progressing. It's also not available for free to anybody, but you have to have a Microsoft 365 subscription.
I use a weirdo, of course, because I am a weirdo.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear this. Yep.
Open source.
I wrote it myself in Lisp. It's a command line application.
Yeah, I did. In fact, it's great. No, yeah. It's open source. Yeah. It's cross-platform, including Windows, Linux, okay. Mac, iOS, and Android. It's called LogSeq. LogSeq.
Is this that I recommended something, or I didn't recommend it? I sent Richard something. Do you remember what that was? It was a something that was also open source.
There's, I bet you sent like him which is more popular, and I'm trying to remember the name because I used it for a long time. Obsidian.
No, Obsidian. I'm familiar with. No, it's not Obsidian. It was one I had never heard of.
This is a successor, LogSeq, in many ways to both Rome. In fact, it's kind of like local Rome.
Because called AppFlowy.
Oh, Flowy's cool too. Yeah, I like LogSeq more and more. I like LogSeq, but a lot of this depends on how it presents to you and how you're going to use it. LogSeq is very much like
well,
a searchable daily journal. But anyway, yeah, all of these are better than Evernote, and that's the point, right?
Yeah, that's the problem. They should have, Evernote should have been the company doing this stuff. And yes, there's a lot of apps that look the same now, like Loop, Notion, App Flowy, whatever. I will say the problem for any of these companies or these products is that I'm using, in my case, it's Notion, but I use this thing that just works and it works great. And it's like, well, the bar for switching is pretty high, not because it's hard to do so, but because why would I switch it? Everything works great. Like I stuck with OneNote for so many years and we had so many problems doing the show notes. It was hard, you know, to switch off of that. And that thing didn't work properly. Like when I have something like this that works, like I don't really want to screw with it.
Reflex is hard to build and difficult to give up. Once you've got the reflex to look somewhere,
that's right. Although you don't want to move away through the tears, you will feel better when it's over. I'm just saying.
I have been pulling more stuff to Loop bit by bit.
Yeah. Okay. And how's that experience been?
It's been pretty good, but I've got a good E365 setup.
And yeah.
We're both synced on it now, so it's the interface is immature. It's still the mobile product's a bit clumsy. But yeah, it's there. And it's it's getting weirder, getting more unstable.
Yeah.
I noticed.
The mobile app kept not crashing, but it would literally say say something like something's wrong or something instead of loading my notes. It's like, guys,
really,
seriously.
Really worthless messages, just continuously throbbing, like eventually a page will come down, maybe, I don't know for sure. It's like, listen, I needed to make a note, that's why I opened you.
Oh, in my case, my needs were even less. I just need to look at a note. I'm at the gym. I want to know how much weight to put on this thing. You know, it's simple.
I was busy doing something that wasn't what I needed. So then it's like, you're gone. You're out. Bye.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. You have enough of those experiences. You're like, well, that's why, you know, when I switched back to the Pixel, you go through the apps, you're going to install. I'm like, I'm just going to put Notion on here. It works. You know?
Yeah. Well, I've been using Loop as I document the new smart home bit by bit, adding new features into Home Assistant and things and adding more, you know, you need all your Z-Wave codes and stuff. And so I've just from the very beginning been putting those into Loop so that I have them all. Don't have to go look them up again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know what to say.
I saw Activision Blizzard on the list and I was delighted.
You're the only one, Richard. I just want to say, I'm glad you enjoyed this.
There's actually some more recent news about that from today, but we'll get to that. Okay, so that's all I got for. I guess I should have called that productivity or something.
Yeah, by the way, the Pixel is getting just to call back because we're getting now this AI summary thing in the Pixel feature drop any minute now. I think and more, this is a fantastic device.
Yep. Let me see if I can bring up something see if I can make this happen because it usually happens when I don't. Yeah. So if you just look at a story in like the Google Discover feed, a little pane pops up at the bottom. It says related insights and it says generative AI, blah, blah, blah. But it's like this article reports in a new feature called blah, blah, blah that's doing this. This feature comes to you. You know, it's just it's a nice little summary.
Simple.
And then after that, it's, you can find more stories that are similar, I guess, which is useful. But this is going to be everything. It's going to be everything.
I agree.
You know,
this is the real use of AI. Simple stuff like this.
Every email you get is going to have a summary over on the side. Every search result you do is going to have
a summary. For instance, you might say, hey, scan my emails from today and give me a to-do list. I mean, wouldn't that be great?
Oh, here's an idea. How about not having me to go to Gmail and say, this thing is spam?
Right.
How about you just figure it out?
Right.
You know, they do this on my phone very effectively with text messages. By the way, another Pixel feature, right? They do this pretty effectively with phone calls, meaning that they do call screening. They don't do so much the automatic, this is spam thing, although I guess that happens sometimes. More often than not, my screen pops up, says, hey, this unknown number is calling you. What do you want to do? It's like, screen it. And I would say 99% of the time, they hang up and that's the end of that because they're a spammer. Yeah. Right? That stuff is helpful. It's very helpful. So, it's going to be a bunch of this stuff.
I've done that the complicated way through Teams phone on E365. I've set up the press 1 for Richard, press 2, that kind of thing. And that just knocks out all the software. The software isn't capable of
doing
that. The person is.
Right.
But I realized, like, that's not a normal thing to set up, a voice interactive module. Like, it's not trivial. Like, it's a bunch of steps to make that happen. But, boy, there goes your spam calls.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's good stuff. Antitrust, it's been a great year for antitrust. Love antitrust. Google and Epic have gone to court, just like Apple and Epic went, and things are going a little differently this time. A lot of evidence against Google, which is really interesting. Two big things happened in the past week, both on the same day. It was probably Friday last week. The judge is really fed up with Google, and he basically, Google has purposefully and has a policy of purposefully destroying chats between employees so that that information cannot be used later in court against them. That is illegal, and the judge is going to launch a separate investigation of Google for this,
which
is crazy.
But don't put it in writing, don't put it in writing. And if you
literally the CEO of the company was one of the people who admitted to this. Like, this is crazy.
Bad behavior.
So that's fascinating. Kent Walker, he's their chief counsel, right? I had probably made a comment about him maybe 2-3 months ago because Google was talking about fighting this, all their antitrust stuff. And it sounds like Microsoft from 1997. This is the wrong language. It's the wrong
stance. These guys need a Brad Smith, like, in the worst way.
And he made this guy get on the stand to explain the behavior. And then he just cut him off and said, stop it. You're tap dancing around the question. He says, it is deeply troubling to me as a judicial officer of the United States that Google did this. This is the most serious and disturbing evidence I've ever seen in my decade on the bench with respect to a party intentionally suppressing relevant evidence. So we'll see what comes out of that. But that's fascinating, whatever happens in this case. But the other thing he did on Friday was, I don't have the exact exchange in front of me, but there was an exchange between, Epic and Google. And the judge said, hold on a second. Have you guys never even tried to settle this case privately? And they've never even talked to each other about it. And he says, so let me get this straight. He went to Epic. He said, well, what is it you want? And Epic said, we want these three things. He said, the third one's stupid. We're not doing that. But the other two, Google is already giving these terms to other companies like Spotify. So I don't see any reason why they can't give them to you. So why don't you guys get in a room and figure out a settlement? And you have to do that before the jury comes back with a verdict, because it's not going to go very well for Google. Like, he didn't say that. That was my editorial.
This is totally self-inflicted by Google, then. Like, they just mishandled this.
Yeah.
I'm sure Epic reached out to them saying, we should make a deal. And they were just stonewalling, ignoring.
I'm not sure about the, Epic is the underdog.
Epic's got its own crazy, too.
They are on a different crazy level. Yes. They are the, poking the bear company here, right? They're doing that. We don't know, but this is a lot like Google Sonos in a way. We don't really know what discussions have occurred, if any, and we see the accusations, and we understand part of the truth.
It is astonishing the 21st century to be this tone deaf to being to do legal in a tech giant. Like, this is, when Microsoft was screwing this up in the 90s, they were the first, really.
And really, no one has IBM done this since then,
but
right?
It's not true today.
When Intel faced similar charges in Europe in the mid-2000s, they just said, we'll just do whatever you want. The interesting thing about what Intel did was, aside from not being Microsoft, what did Microsoft do? We're going to do the opposite. So they ended up paying several billion in fees. I don't remember what it was. They actually later got that money back. What they did was just agree to whatever the settlement was, and they did it, and then they appealed. And they won.
Right.
But rather than be belligerent up front and just look like jerks, they did the right thing, and it worked out well for them. So it's interesting now, most of big tech is finding themselves under some kind of an antitrust shade right now. And Google, more than all of them, and maybe more than all of them combined, I'm not even sure, but Google's got a lot of stuff going on right now. And this is not going to go well for them.
I put Google and Facebook out front on those. And then Apple's been pretty slick. Yeah. Microsoft is now, the kinder, gentler tech giant.
Right, right.
And Amazon, I don't know how they keep dodging the bullets. Like, it's astonishing.
Yeah, it is, actually. Well, so, yeah.
I just wonder if they slow down delivery to their judges.
Yes. Right, exactly. Or speed them up.
Yeah.
You know, just say, I did the one where it's going to come next Tuesday, but that's good because I'm saving the environment. He's like, no, you're getting it today.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you're getting it today. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But I feel like they're all going to have their day. So it's happening. Yeah. The FTC today was in a court with Microsoft complaining about Activision Blizzard, literally today. They're still trying to unwind this thing. And Microsoft back in September had gotten a group of venture capital firms. And I think it was seven. Let me make sure I'm right about that. Yeah, seven that petitioned the FTC to stop the stupidness. Like this is like you are literally anti-innovation. Like you're so blindly going after big companies that you don't understand the harm this is going to have. This is how money is generated, right? By this kind of thing. This is how, you know, these companies make money. And so this week, Microsoft had another 30 venture capital firms, rather.
How is this happening? Are they reaching out to them? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, probably. I'm sure they are. This has got to be.
Just Brad Smith calling in favors then, right? Like, just
ringing around. Well, so these guys are managing money, right? They have a collected asset level of $130 billion. Just the 30, the new 30, not including the old seven. Going to the FTC and saying, I don't know if you know anything about business, but this is how business works, and please stop trying to stop that. So that's interesting to me. But yeah, they're trying to do their little internal court process and convince the judge that ruled against them to reconsider. It's like it's like some weird mulligan thing they're looking for. I don't know. I don't know. This isn't, I'm not sure of this part of it. I don't know the FTC that well, but this is not how this goes. Usually, generally speaking, every single time until this time, when the FTC has lost in federal court, they drop the case internally. This, I believe, is the only time in history where they have, in fact, brought the case back internally after losing in court, in a federal court. So it's just a, it's just, I don't know what's going on with these people, but yeah, whatever. Microsoft, speaking of antitrust, is in trouble with the UK CMA, not for Activision Blizzard anymore. They're all buddies over that, but rather about the cloud licensing terms, which their competitors are saying makes it harder for companies to use the cloud in many ways the way it's supposed to be used, which is multi-cloud, right? You kind of spread things out over to multiple clouds. So Google and Amazon and many other companies too, but these are the two big ones, have weighed in and written letters to the CMA in support of bringing Microsoft to terms to try to make them to change this because they make it very hard and very expensive for customers to either leave them entirely and go to a different cloud or do the multi-cloud thing. And
well, that seems fair, really.
It does. Yeah, there's some good ideas.
I don't know how they – what are they doing? That they think this is
so. There's a history to this. The Microsoft in 2019 and then again in 2022 has actually changed their cloud licensing terms to address concerns in the EU that they were anti-competitive. If I might be misremembering, but I believe it was the 2019 one where Microsoft actually came out and said, "You know what? You're right. We didn't do this to harm customers or competitors, but we looked at it and we said, you know, yep, you're right. We're going to do it." And then they made whatever changes they made and everyone can fix it. You didn't like fix anything. What are you doing?
I remember that. Yeah.
So in 2022, let's see if I can find out the description of this. They made it prohibitively expensive for customers to run Windows and Office workloads on non-Azure cloud platforms like AWS and Google Cloud, triggering inquiries from EU regulators. That was 2019. I'm sorry. That's when they said, no, the complaints were valid. You're right. And we're going to fix it. And then whatever they changed didn't fix it in the slightest. And so in 2022, they came up with a plan to make it expensive for customers to run Windows software, like Windows, Windows Server, Office, and SQL Server on non-Microsoft cloud platforms in the EU. And it's like, guys, this is the exact opposite of what we were asking you to do. And so I think it's called Op something. What's the name of this company? There's a European cloud vendor. Maybe it's my Amazon story. Opware or someone was basically the company said, is anyone looking at this? You know, like we're the way the cloud's supposed to work is the exact opposite of what Microsoft is doing. And Microsoft
they don't really talk about product in here, but it seems to me like this is the virtual desktop stuff. which gets very favorable licensing terms for Office and things.
Right.
Where if you're going to go run another VDI stack over on Oracle or Google's VDI stack, you got to pay full licenses for all those products.
Yeah. And I guess they punish customers who try to go multi-cloud, or they punish customers that try to go off their cloud. I don't know. So Google kind of argued that if we don't fix this through regulation, then the barrier to entry just gets so high, no one's going to be able to compete. You know, Microsoft will just keep their workloads on Microsoft. And, from the customer's perspective, they're like, look, I'm paying for Windows. Who cares where I run it? I mean, if I run it on Azure or AWS or whatever, I guess that company gets that part of it, but we're still licensing it from you. I mean, what's the difference? But I guess they have completely different licensing terms depending on
how. Yeah, I think that's the bigger thing here is that you're paying full license when you're running on the other cloud, but there's a steep discounts when you're running in Azure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
It's like if it was cheaper to run Windows on a Surface laptop than it is on a Dell.
Right.
Right? That would be wrong.
Well, I mean, technically probably is. I guess, but you don't really see that as an end user. Like, in other words, you don't see the number of that cost when you buy a computer.
Quite as clearly as you can see it in this scenario. Yeah. Like, Microsoft is trying to get rid of on-prem SQL Server 2012.
Yeah.
But there's always some apps that can't upgrade. So they've offered a special deal on VMs running 2012 that'll continue to get patched and so forth. Right. But you're not going to get that offer on any other cloud stack.
Yep.
Right. It's
actually Microsoft's head. So. That might be what justifies.
Okay. Is that any competitive? I guess.
In Microsoft's head, they don't, in fact, charge as much for Windows running on Surface, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, probably.
So it's kind of the same.
It's just that Surface is so expensive.
You don't really see it. It's not like a Surface.
It's a hidden charge. But in their minds, we make $5 per unit sold on Surface in the Windows division, and we make $30 per unit sold for Dell.
There's a big change happening right now in the world, though, because what we're kind of talking about here is, I hate to use this term, but it's almost like legacy workloads in a way.
Yeah.
Because there's this notion of these cloud native apps. You know, Microsoft talked a lot about this at Ignite. They talked about this a little bit before. And there's a .NET kind of implementation of this idea they came out with. Here's your stack, here's the tools you need, here's all the stuff, it's all set up. That's multi-cloud, it's any cloud, like it's a cloud agnostic. And I think that's the way the world's going. But the issue here, of course, is that Microsoft was able to leverage their dominance in what was once work group computing and then on-prem, server data center computing and bring those customers with them into the cloud. So you kind of got the Fortune, whatever, 100, 500, whatever it is, kind of marching along with Microsoft. I think what these companies are looking for is them not to have that leverage over the future, because it's going to be it is already, but it's going to be heterogeneous. And it's these kind of cloud native apps are going to be, they're not going to be tied to Azure or AWS. They're going to work everywhere, right? That's the future, but we're in the now. So I think they're trying to prevent Microsoft from eking out their last measure of dominance while this world still exists or whatever. I don't know. Interesting.
Last chance to be a monopoly.
You gotta ring that, ring that sponge as much as you can, right?
Yeah, and it's funny that they're taking the old monopolies of Windows and Office, leverage supposedly new monopolies.
But it is the biggest companies in the world that will have some random line of business app or some server, like you said, an on-prem server now running in a VM and some cloud thing. That's probably big business, right? It's not, it's not the future, but it's going to be in place for a long time.
Yeah.
And, it's money, so Microsoft's making it hard to move that stuff.
Hey, when it comes to money, it's money. Don't mess with my money.
As I said to my daughter, privilege has its privileges.
That's very profound. You're deep.
Yep.
Let's speaking of deep, let's talk Xbox, baby.
Yeah. So Microsoft confirmed that they are working on an Xbox gaming store for mobile. It is not telling us who it's working with, but it is working with partners. They didn't say this either, but they're clearly betting on some opening up of app stores because of the DMA and the EU, the Digital Markets Act, right? That is going to force these companies to open up their platforms. And it's the, and of course, this is what came out of Apple blocking Xbox, Xbox Cloud Gaming, which used to be xCloud, on their platforms, right? Because they wanted that per game VIG. And, you know, Microsoft argued, I think, effectively that this is, we're Netflix. No one's downloading or buying games. They're just streaming them like they do with movies, our TV shows on Netflix. And, you know, that's Apple. And that's what happens, you know, when you have a company that's like kind of secretly as terrible as Apple is. So we will see what comes out of this. But there's also this, I don't know where this came out of, some kind of a regulatory filing where the firm Microsoft was seen as creating something that they call the Xbox Mobile Platform, which is a next generation game store that operates across a range of devices, including mobile. So this seems to me like it's going to be something like Xbox Game Pass or game or cloud gaming, where it's, you know, a subscription service. It will work across platforms, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't know, have all the details, but Phil Spencer admitted they're doing it. So we shall see. It's a new month, December, and we have some new games. And actually, I recognize some of these games. I feel like such an old person now when I do the Game Pass stuff, because I never know any of the games. But this is like Far Cry 6, Remnant, Tomb Raider. I should say Rise. I think it is Rise of the Tomb Raider, right? Which is a reasonably recent game. And then World War Z Aftermath, right? And then a bunch of other games too, including Goat Simulator 3. Because that one,
one and two were so good. I think
three. I'm sorry, if you have not played Goat Simulator, you do not know how funny that
you
is.
You do have it to play it. You play a angry goat, and you get to go around and screw things up. And it's not really
I am in real life an angry goat, and so why would I want to do that in a
it
game?
Could be a Paul Thurrott simulator, really.
It's like a creating a video game called Drive to the Gym, where you just get mad at the other drivers, which I do that in real life. I don't need to do that in a game.
It is a great game.
So funny.
Yeah.
This is like I said, it's the first time in a long time I've looked at this list of games and be like, oh, I know some of these games. Oh, good. And then, of course, it probably won't happen right in January, but we're counting on next year for the big Activision bonanza to occur, and we'll see what happens there. I didn't write about this yet. I probably will put something up on the site, but this just came out today, right before the show started. But Microsoft actually made a post where they said, "Hey, you might have noticed when you play games on Xbox that they're like a license agreement pop up kind of appears, and people are freaking out, and it's like, what's going on here?" And it's just like, look. We have this commitment with the European Union to do certain things with our games that we've now acquired with Activision Blizzard. We're legally required to show you this information. You'll only see it once. You'll never see it again. It will never happen again. And so they basically said, look, we know this is a minor inconvenience, but we have to honor our commitments. And we're just
indicating. It's just another cookie banner, right? What is it? What does it say?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there's been some stuff recently with pop-ups on Xbox and also on Windows, by the way. So Starfield has been advertised on the Windows 11 lock screen, which is kind of crappy because that's Windows Spotlight is, you know, beautiful photography from Bing. And yeah, there's a little addy type things in there, but it's not like a full screen ad for a game. And you know, so there's like stuff like that.
Every time the companies remind you, your stuff is not yours.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So actually, since you said that, let me jump forward to the last story, which is that Sony started alerting PlayStation users that if they purchased any content from Discovery, it's going away.
Oh, my God.
They never owned it. They just gave money.
Yeah.
This has happened
from
time to time.
You thought you were buying it? You weren't buying it.
No. Yeah. This can happen, right? This one could be big. I mean, the percentage of people who buy a bunch of Discovery shows, we're talking like Mythbusters and
buy Discovery shows, right? They just,
I hope not, but yeah. I'm trying to figure out that, you know, Venn diagram of you like these shows and you have a PlayStation and for some reason you buy them and you're in that little slice in the middle, but, I don't know.
It must be a small group. It must be.
I hope so. But it is that reminder, you know. If you buy content digitally, you don't really own it. And it's tough. Every once in a while, there's a story like this where it gets taken away. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft still sells TV shows and movies and rents movies through their store and on Xbox and on Windows. But I guess Sony stopped selling movies and TV shows about 2 years ago. And the promise at the time was obviously your content's there. You can still access it. You can keep playing it back. But I guess, I don't know, they have to pay some ongoing license fee or something? Or they were like, yeah, we're not doing that. I have no idea. But that kind of sucks. But
yeah, it's begging for regulation. It's like, listen, if you're offering an in perpetuity license,
yeah,
there'd be in perpetuity.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like this is something that needs to be fixed.
Oh, it always says, though, in the fine print, you don't own this. Stuff. You can't.
Yeah. Who reads that stuff?
Yeah. Right? But I mean,
that's not.
It's designed not to be read.
Right. But people ought to know by now, you're not buying anything. You're renting it. If it's streaming, yeah, you're renting it.
Plus, you know, whose perpetuity are we talking about here?
Yeah.
You know. And then I'm not interested in this in the slightest, but Grand Theft Auto 6, they've dropped their first trailer. It's caused quite an excitement good out in the world.
Yeah, it looks good. Have you watched it? Looks like a TV show. I'm going to make you watch it right now. It looks just like a TV show. It's quite beautiful. We were talking about it on Mac Break Weekly because I was curious if they're using Unreal or Unity or what, and they do their own. They have their own Rockstar engine, which has been getting better.
I mean, this thing used to be so antiquated looking.
Oh, yeah. People used to make fun of how people walked in the game and stuff, you know, but it looks a little bit more. I'm gonna cut away now because it's going to get a little racy.
Yeah.
But.
Right. Well, that's all right. I'll keep it racy here. No. So,
can you twerk, Paul? Because
I cannot. I can do my imitation of the Doom guy, though, which is pretty funny, but it's impossible with the little lens we have on the camera here. But my friend used to say, like, walk into a wall and then you move sideways. You like walk into a wall.
Yeah.
And you move sideways.
That's what people use with GTA. They'd show these weird walks. And oh, my God. Watching the trailer is getting weirder and weirder.
It goes off the rails.
Yeah, really. Wow.
But that's what those people want, right? I think there's an audience for this game, and I'm not that audience.
You're not. It's not you.
It's so well done. It really does look like a TV show, I have to say. Yeah. Anyway, it's coming soon.
Yeah.
Is it an Xbox title? Or?
I think it's going to be everywhere.
Everywhere.
It?
Yeah.
I refuse to pay any attention to it, but I thought I'd mention it because I know some people.
You're not alone.
Won't care.
And you're also alone. You're both simultaneously.
My wife just sent me a text message to that effect. I'm not here anymore.
Goodbye.
Okay. In general or just like right now?
Good. That's that it? All right.
Wow.
It's going to be one of the two. So
yeah.
Either way, I'll persist.
You guys own a home in Mexico. I think you're tied for life. I don't think they allow you to not do it.
Be able to sell that thing because of Mexico.
Never.
Mm.
Never. When are you going back? You going back for Christmas? You should go back for Christmas. Feliz Navidad.
No, I don't want. No, I like the holidays here. We're going to go back beginning of February, I think, through the middle of March, something like that.
Nice. That's a good time.
Yeah.
It's February, so worst grim.
We have to deal with January, but then we're going to miss most of the rest of the
month. February is just like, winter will never end.
I know.
It's just never going to end now.
Well, here, March is the same. It's February, March. It's like, seriously, just end. Yeah.
So that's a good time to be a snowbird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our show today, we're going to get to the back of the book in just a bit. Tips, tricks, apps, Runners Radio, and ladies and gentlemen, your brown liquor pick of the week. First, a word from HID Global. They're our sponsor. Leave the stress of tedious PKI management behind in 2023 and enter 2024 with less stress and complete certificate lifecycle automation from HID Global's PKI as a service model. With Google moving toward 90-day SSL certificates, you could get caught in a tough place here. You got to have automation. I mean, every 3 months, it's going to be hard to remember. HID's model of automation doesn't require any additional hardware, no software investment, no installs in order to fully automate the life cycles of your organization's certificates. That's sweet. For Google and Mac systems, HID's connector model of PKI uses open source certificate utilities so your organization can use multiple operating systems. That's really nice for BYOD as well. Ease your procurement pains with HID Global. You'll get up and running in 2 weeks. before year's end. That's a lot quicker than the competition. And of course, HID Global's assistance with your deployment always includes their incomparable white glove service, expertise, and knowledge. And of course, you'll get ownership of private keys. HID takes care of your PKI so you can spend your holidays, your weekends, taking care of yourself, your family, the things that matter to you outside of work. Let HID automate it. Go to hid.link/wwdemo today to learn more. You owe it to yourself. hid.link/wwdemo, Windows Weekly Demo. hid.link/wwdemo right now and find out what HID Global can do for your PKI management. All right, back of the book time. Little Paulie Thurrott has a lovely little tip for you.
Sorry, I muted you. This one comes actually from a couple of readers. I had written and talked about this notion of, you know, you're on 22H2, you want to get to 23H2. Here are the tools you can use. They're all on the Download Windows 11 website, right? There's the installation assistant, the installation media that you can create with the media creation tool, and then you can just download the ISO. And those all should work. They're all upgraded now to 23H2. Remember, the media creation tool was not for a while. But then someone chimed in with, well, what about ARM? None of those tools work on ARM. And I was like, oh gosh, like, I don't know. So I checked that to be sure. And as it turns out, if you're on Windows and ARM, and especially if you're on a Mac, right, which is probably most people these
days. That's how I use it,
Right, Parallels Desktop. If you are stuck on 22H2, which I was as well, actually, on Parallels on the Mac, what you can download is the KB, the enablement package, the EKB, that upgrades you to 23H2. It just flips the switch because you already have all the code in there. It's just not enabled. This thing's a really small download. It's a quick reboot. The number you're looking for is KB5027397. I have a link to it in the article. You can just click direct download, run it, reboot, and you're on 23H2. That's all it takes. So it works great, actually. So at this point in time, even if you're on ARM, you should be able to get, should be able to upgrade as long, you know, assuming everything is compatible, et cetera. So there you go. And then I have a couple of, I have one app pick and then another, like kind of a mobile app pick. I can't remember the time frame of this. I've been using an app called Image Glass as an image viewer. I love it. I love how configurable it is. I run it full screen with no UI at all and brings up an image, you hit escape, it disappears, that kind of thing. I've been using the free version off the website. You can buy it in the Microsoft store, but they just upgraded to a new version called Image Glass 9. And if you go to the web now, you get like Image Glass Classic, and it's not the Image Glass I was using before. It's kind of this weird app that I don't really like and what's going on here. And I thought, you know what? I use this thing every single day. I should just buy this. It is $10, but it's fantastic.
Is this the new Irfan View? This is like the one that will become the default.
That's a good way to say it. It is for me. I love it. The thing I like the most about it is it's compatible with everything. So now if I download, like say I'm writing a story about Google or Microsoft or whatever the company is, and they have an image on their webpage, I download it and I want to use that as the hero graphic. If it's in like a format like WebP, the version of, actually I think every version of Adobe Photoshop Elements cannot work with those kind of newer web formats. But I load it up. I just open it in Image Glass, Control S to save it, saves it a ping to the desktop, goes into, you know, it's awesome for that as well. But mostly it's for image viewing, but it is $10, but it's such a fantastic app. And if you use it, I feel like you should support the person. In this case, it is a person who makes it. It's a great app. You said something earlier, Leo, that reminded me of this. And when you did one of the ad breaks, I ran out to go look for it. And one of the things that is a huge pet peeve for me, and I know it's surprising I would have a pet peeve, is gone through over the years many different, I'll call them news feed, like it's like a news feed reader, like Google News or MSN News back in the day, or there's all kinds of these things. Instapaper was one, or what,
is Pocket.
These things are. Yeah. Well, Pocket I actually do use. I use that for a different thing. But as far as like reading the actual news, you know, for me specifically, like tech feed, the Google thing is, it was better than whatever Microsoft was at the time, but it's gotten so much worse over time. It's driving me crazy. And I found something called Artifact. which is available on iOS and Android, and, you know, iPad and iPhone, right? So, and I read my news in the morning on an iPad. So I read a couple of newspapers, and I usually go to Google News. But today, I skipped Google News, and I went to this thing instead. You can customize it, obviously. That's part of the point. And, you know, we'll see. It's early days. It's just been a couple of days, but this might be it. I might have finally found, like, what do you call this? A news feed reader or a news feed?
Yeah, news reader. Yeah.
News consolidator.
Yeah, it's so far it's been fantastic, and I didn't think I was ever going to find anyone that was any good.
I've used this. I like it.
Yeah, I like it a lot. And you know, I went in the beginning. You kind of tell like these are the things I care about. And when there are like the GTA stuff, there was a bunch of that yesterday and probably tomorrow today as well. I kind of you can press and hold and say I'm really not interested in this topic, and the idea is that you know you'll see less about that over time, right? So, yeah, which is a very basic feature, but I can tell you, Google ignores everything I've ever sent it. I've sent Google approximately 8,000 pieces of feedback,
and neither does Apple News, neither does MSN News. Yeah. It's clear they have their own agenda, right?
Personalized suggestions in Windows is the biggest lie in the history of lies, because if it was personalized, you would know that I'm already paying for Microsoft 365 subscription.
Right. Exactly.
So why did I give you permission to track me around the internet when you're not even sending me personalized anything?
And this was created by, I'm trying to remember, was it Kevin Systrom, the founder of Instagram? I mean, it's a big shot.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It was two guys from Instagram. That's right. Yeah. That's true.
So as a result, they have enough money that they don't have to charge you for this.
Yeah. Maybe that changes, but
that's gotta
as
change.
Of today,
yeah,
I think it's great.
So. Yeah. Oh, I know. I use it. I love it. It's a really good choice. And unlike, I don't know how it is with some of these other ones, but unlike Apple's news, I can actually share. I can bookmark an article.
Share. Right. So when I want to read things later, that's when I go to Pocket.
Right.
That's what I use Pocket
for. Yeah. I'm sorry. When you said Instapaper, that's kind of more like Pocket.
The one that flip something?
Flipboard you're talking about. And this Flipboard, is actually very, look, I just moved up to Learner. They've gamified this to get you to, I don't know what, do more. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
I was way past Learner. This must be, it's a newer phone. That's right. Not Instapaper, Flipboard. Yeah. Flipboard's still around, by the way. And still
I'm sure
good.
It is.
Yeah. Mike McCune does that. And he's a listener.
My big Flipboard memory was that the version of Flipboard on Windows Phone did not flip.
That's right.
Cause that was the effect thing. It had.
It was a magazine.
I'm like, but does it flip? People would be like, well, yeah, there's a new version out. I'm like, does it flip? Like, I don't care. If it doesn't flip, I'm not even going
to
look at it.
Too hard to flip. Yeah. So. We're not going to flip. We won't be flipping. Artifact, ArtiFact on iOS and Android.
Yes.
An iPad. I think Mr. Richard Campbell should tell us about some great podcast listening coming up.
Yeah. This week, I talked to Sharon Weaver, who's an M365 consultant, and we called the show Modernizing Using M365. The conversation really got into how work has changed post-pandemic or, you know, in the later stages of the pandemic, and how the tools that are available in M365 can facilitate some work from home, some work in the office, some remote, and just making all of that easier, more possible so that you have more ways to be able to work, to be able to find the data you need to find, to be able to, you know, show that you've delivered what you need to deliver without having to be present all the time.
Cool.
Yeah, great conversation. Sharon's awesome.
RunAsRadio.com, Richard's fine show. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. The moment, the reason you sit through this entire show.
Yes, thank you for putting up with the rest of the show.
It's time for brown liquor.
I'm going to a super classic because we're all going to be visiting family and things. And many folks that don't buy a lot of whiskey often have this particular whiskey, arguably the original, the very first modern single malt is Glenfiddich 12. So Glenfiddich is not the oldest distillery in the books. They started in the late 1880s. First production was 1887 by William Grant. They are still family owned. They've not been bought by any of the big conglomerates. They're on their fifth generation. They do their own barrel work.
They do their own water handling. In the 1960s was when they really did this whole move towards very contemporary whiskey. They were the first to start advertising single malts. And so a designer named Hans Schlegger, very famous designer in the 1960s, came up with that triangular bottle that is sort of what Glenfiddich is known for. And they did that marketing and sort of spread the idea of the single malt whiskey around the world, which I think is part of the reason that people aren't that wildly excited about Glenfiddich, because it's almost like Tommy Hilfiger. It's over put out there. Too many folks. Oh, did my camera just quit?
You're dark, but that's okay because we're looking at whiskey. So. Did you?
Yes, because it's the top.
The electricity is out.
It's an audio show anyway.
It's dark. It's very dark in Florida. Okay, go ahead.
So they're also one of the very first places to ever build a visitor center.
Oh.
So they have a phenomenal tour. I absolutely recommend it. The one interesting thing about their tour is that they do hire pretty girls to do the tour. The lady that took us around was from Estonia. But it's considered, it's like one third of all single malt sold around the world of Scottish single malts, Glenfiddich 12. It's unbelievably popular. And the Glenfiddich distillery is massive. 16 wash stills, 27 spirit stills. Their stills are relatively small. They have their own coppersmith on the grounds that maintains the stills and does all of their own work on that. One of the tricks they learned in the 60s to make a consistent whiskey before anybody else was really making consistent whiskey is that they split any given distillate into.
Oh, we lost him.
We've split Richard Campbell into two. There we go.
He's back.
He's back.
We lost you. You said one thing they did was split.
They split the distillation into two different types of barrels. They'll put about 90% of it into bourbon casks, 10% into sherry casks. And then go their age range, 12, 15, 18, and then they'll vat them. They'll combine them all in a wooden vat, which it'll probably spend a year in that vat as well. And then they're working to the flavor profile. So they learned to do this in the 60s, well before other distilleries were doing it. And so they were able to make the same whiskey every year before almost anybody else did that. That being said, they also pioneered things that people aren't big fans of these days, like they color the whiskey. They use chill filtration. All of those tricks to make a very consistent product. It's eminently drinkable. It comes in at 40%, which is the old-fashioned kind of way to do spirits. These days, we mostly see 45s and 47s that are not chill filtered because then they won't cloud because they're a little bit higher. But it's only $40. You kind of can't go wrong.
We have to. At some point, it would be fun to have you, Richard, do a gift guide because certainly some families, if you brought Glenfiddich, they'd say, oh, great, we love that. Or, oh, fancy, if they've been drinking, you know, I don't know, old Johnny Walker or something. But then there's some people who consider themselves connoisseurs, and it'd be nice to know what a good gift bottle would be for somebody who's a little more serious and that kind of thing. So maybe as we get closer to the holidays. So
yeah, it's a very normal thing for me to get a message from someone saying, hey, I want to buy a bottle of whiskey for this guy. I got $100 to spend. What do you think?
Who would you bring Glenfiddich to? Whose house would you bring that to?
And the way I described it was you're going to encounter this. Like you go into a place that has only one single malt, it'll probably be Fiddich.
Right.
I wouldn't tend to buy it unless you have really a novice drinker.
Okay.
That being said, you know, if you're an experienced drinker of whiskey, go back and try it again. It's better than you remember.
So it's not bad. Yeah, it's good.
It's not nothing bad about it. It's lovely. But it is the classic definition of the light spey.
Yeah.
Often as we mature as whiskey drinkers, you look for stronger flavors and more range, more wood. And all of that is kind of muted in Fiddich. Because they were working towards that consistent product. It doesn't shine as brightly as some other whiskeys you could try.
It's generic. It's a generic, perfectly fine whiskey.
It's the price you pay for defining the class of single malt. You become
the liquor you recommended last week, the Pendleton Rye 12.
The Pendleton Rye.
I've not gotten yet, but they do have it in Pennsylvania, just not at the store we go to.
Oh, I see.
So the next time we venture further afield, we're going to go grab that one.
I'm finding more and more folks sending me pictures of the bottles I talk about. So
yeah, it's cool.
Folks out there picking them up.
Yep.
But I pulled this one because we don't normally talk about it. It's easy to go off into la-la land of crazy whiskey. And we are going to be visiting uncles and things that they probably have one. I have been given many bottles of this over the years. I don't have them anymore.
Well, that's a good sign. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a good, solid, drinkable, consistent whiskey.
Would you call it quaffable?
Yeah, but it's super old school. They've been basically making it the same way for 60 years.
Would you like to nosh?
It's a quaff. Let's quaff and nosh.
I hate those words so much.
You should realize before the 1960s, you didn't drink single malts unless you were in Scotland, and even then it was pretty rare. Yeah.
Isn't that blends. Interesting? Isn't
That's
that interesting?
What you drank.
Like a Crown Royal or something.
Well, like Johnny Walker.
Johnny Walker.
Or a Chivas.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? Or
those were the big brands. I mean, Chivas was like the fancy brand when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so then Grant and Sons started this whole movement with the single malt. That whole idea created a prestige brand around it that's arguably outgrown them while they're crying all the way to the bank selling more of that than anybody else.
I know the answer to this, but Wojo's asking in our Discord, the fact that it's called single malt implies there's a double malt. Is that right? Or what does single malt mean?
The single malt is supposed to be, it means a single malting of the barley. We talked about this back in the day when we did the Scottish
series.
Yeah,
we have a whole series of these on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah. And today, it really means it comes from one distillery.
Okay.
They really messed with the idea of single malt these days.
I know in wines, you get blends a lot, especially here in Napa, where they want consistency. And so they'll do these blends.
We get blends here that are just, they bring in the grapes from somewhere else.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't even have to be from the area.
Yeah. And the winemaker's aiming at a certain consistency and kind of cooking it up by putting in different grapes.
Well, that's part of the trick of the vatting I was describing. Like in a bottle of Glenfiddich 12 is not only 12-year-old whiskey. There's older in it. They're trying to get to that consistent flavor profile. And so
which is the thing that escapes a lot of winemakers, frankly. Where you should, you know, they are also shooting for this kind of consistency, but it seems hard in the wine world.
Yeah. No, it's true. There are very few wines, very few varietals that are year to year.
Because they're so impacted by the weather that year or whatever, you know, higher than or lower than normal temperatures, lots of fog, you know, whatever it might be. Some are more resilient.
We find Côte de Rhone's, especially Châteauneuf de Pape, is very consistent year after year. A lot of Bordeaux's are pretty consistent. Burgundies, you never know what you're going to get year to year.
Yeah, it could be anything. French fries are horrible for that because you have no idea what they are.
Yeah. Our table wine is Châteauneuf de Pape because it is very consistent year over year. It's not expensive, but I think it's a good wine.
And they represent a common customer. Well, I want to know what I'm going to get.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I pick up the bottle, I know what to expect.
Yeah, I'm not here to travel. I just want
exactly.
I'm not looking to be surprised by my drink.
Yeah, no surprises. No surprise. Richard Campbell is our brown liquor guru. You'll find him at runasradio.com, and he's in Orlando right now. What are you in Orlando for?
I'm at the Dev Intersection Conference, and it's getting later in the day, so I think people are coming back from the Disneys, and gradually the internet is dying.
We'll let you go and find something else to do, something more gainful to do. Yeah. Thank you, Richard. Runasradio.com.net rocks is his other show, and he's available for talks. He's great and in great demand, too, by the way. Paul Theroux writes at Theroux.com. If you become a premium member, you'll get some really extra good content. He just does some great stuff. And, of course, his book. Actually, two books.
Challenge anyone listening to this to download the latest version of the Windows 11 field guide and find that screenshot I was talking about, the one that is going to be relevant to absolutely nobody.
The new screenshot is here. Leanpub.com has the field guide to Windows 11, which includes Windows 10 in it, and Windows Everywhere, his Windows history, which is really great. Leanpub.com, that's where you'll find Paul's books. And you'll find both Paul and Richard right here every Wednesday. Now, we do Windows Weekly at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. And contrary to what you have been told earlier, we are going to continue live streaming it for all. We were hoping we could make that a club benefit the behind the scenes and all that stuff. But Discord's live video isn't ready yet. It's not that good. So we're going to continue to live stream shows individually the minute the show begins on YouTube at youtube.com/twit. If you click the bell, you'll get a notification when we go live. But it will be for the shows. There won't be reruns. The rerun machine was expensive. There won't be interstitial content. We're going to save that for the club. But the show itself, you'll be able to watch live. 11 a.m. Pacific every Wednesday. But, of course, because it's a podcast, you don't have to do that. Easiest way is just to download an episode. You can get them from our website, twit.tv/ww. There's a YouTube channel dedicated to Windows Weekly that has all the videos from past shows, all 858 of them. Actually, we
and the whiskey collection, too.
Oh, and we did. Yeah. And we put together all of Richard's whiskey bits into one giant bottle of goodness. And it
sounded weird, but whiskey bits. Is there a better way to say that?
Whiskey bit. You could have called the channel that.
Uskabar whiskey bits. If you subscribe in your favorite podcast player, you can also make sure that you get it the minute it's available every Wednesday. We like Pocket Casts only because, you know, with at least with Apple Podcasts, and I think others, if you don't listen to an episode, you stop getting them. They go, oh, you mustn't like this anymore. And we know that, you know, your schedule varies. Some days you hear, some weeks you hear every show, sometimes not. So Pocket Casts will continue, if you set it up this way, and there's settings, continue to download it so you don't miss an episode. That's my only point. We do invite you to join the club. It's becoming more and more significant. We have 8,460 paid members. Thank you. Bless you. And that goes a long way to helping us keep the shows going. There has been, in general, in the podcast industry, a real collapse. Spotify laid off 1,700 people yesterday. It's just because the advertisers, frankly, they're going to people like my son. They're doing influencers, which is, I know how that happens. But if you like our content, the best way forward for us is to get support from our audience. I always wanted to do it that way. You know, we'll probably be ad supported for a while, but you're helping make up the difference. And that could be a big, big deal. So if you're not a member of Club Twit, let me tell you what the benefits are. Besides that glow you get from helping us keep these shows on the air. If you love the shows, $7 a month is not a lot. But you do get ad-free versions of everything, including shows we only put out for the club. Quite a few. You also get access to the Discord, which is a wonderful place to chat. full of animated GIFs. Paul, I know you're laughing at.
I'm laughing at Hank sponsoring Twit.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There's a good idea. Yeah. I like that. Maybe Hank will someday. Join the club. We now have, thanks to Joe, I'm sure, a Club Twit. Glad to have you aboard poster. Nice. And I'm apparently Captain Stubing on this one. Join us today. $7 a month. You also get some specials, stuff that we don't put out anywhere else. But mostly you get that feeling that you know that you're paying for the stuff you love. And thanks to our 8,460 paid members. If honestly, by the end of next year, we got to get to at least 10,000. To keep the lights on. If we get to 20,000, then I will never ask you again. But that's still a tiny fraction of the total audience. If we got 10% of the audience, that'd be 70,000. So I, you know, right now it's a little more than 2%. We could do better. Actually, it's not even that. It's 1.5%. Twit.tv/clubtwit. Please give us a... And if you're already a member, great holiday gift to the geek in your life. We have annual packages too. Paul, Richard, thank you so much. I'm glad to be back. I will see you next week right here on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that Twit now has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.